Okay, I thought I'd do a musical concert this afternoon. All right, James is excited about that. I wish I could actually, but it's not one of the talents God's given me. I can't even make a joyful noise. I've tried it. So instead, I decided to do something that would kind of lead into tonight. Not that you have to be here to make sense of tonight, but to kind of give you a background and some of the things that have motivated me over time. Now, I've got strong opinions about diseases like cancer, heart disease, etc. Things that basically, you know, things that are terminal, that are killing people. And I get angry because there are so many cures for these things that have been suppressed. Now, this afternoon, I'm not going to be talking about the cures so much. We'll do that tonight. But it gets me angry because I think about all the people that I've known and loved over the years that have died from cardiovascular disease, cancer, things that have taken their lives that they didn't have to die. Now I realize when I step back, I get into this so much every day, it's part of my life now. It's almost like second nature, and I say things, and every once in a while I gotta say, well, wait a minute, if you would have heard this 15, 20 years ago, you would have thought it was a crackpot. You would have thought it was nonsense. You would have thought it's just somebody blowing smoke. But I do get angry. And the things that I'm going to talk about tonight, some of them, they're part of history. They're documented. It's there. And anybody can get them and use them and look at them that's willing to have an open mind and do a little bit of research, and you'll find out that things have been suppressed. And they've been suppressed for monetary reasons, for business, so that people and corporations can make money. $1 trillion was spent on pharmaceuticals and drugs last year. $1 trillion went to drugs out of the total $2 trillion that was spent on healthcare in this country. $1 out of $3 that are spent in this country is spent on cancer. If there was a cure for cancer, I didn't do it, but there was these little girls out there, they had the pink ribbons a couple days ago when I went to Walmart, and they had signs up and they were raising money for the cure for cancer. It was hard for me, but I wanted to go over there and say the American Cancer Society doesn't want a cure for cancer, because the minute one exists, they're all laid off, they're out of job, they got to go down and flip hamburgers. It's hard for people to comprehend statements like those, and I realize this sounds very extreme and radical, but it's true. And that's the sad part, and that's what makes me mad. Some of the best and even more famous cures for cancer were developed by people like Kelly, Rife, Hoxie, Gerson, and the list goes on and on and on. And they individually, and every single time they went after these people, they persecuted them. Some they put in jail. Hoxie was arrested. You know, I'm not gonna get the numbers right. I've got the documentary on his life, Harry Hoxie. It was something like 118 times in 12 or 13 months, they arrested this man and put him in jail. Today, there's a man that they keep trying criminally, Dr. Brzezinski. We played a documentary about him, I think it was last year, who has a cure for cancer, and they keep putting him on trial. Three times they've put him on trial to try and take away his license and incarcerate him and put him in jail. And his crime, curing mainly children with inoperable brain tumors that they can't cure themselves, but he is. So things like that do get me upset. But while the men that have done things like this and suppressed these cures and caused people all over the world to suffer are evil, and I believe will be punished for their actions. And quite frankly, it's not nice to say it or think it, but I hope have a terrible, painful, horrible death themselves, because they've caused it for millions and millions of people. Those men might be evil. And because I make statements like this, most people don't understand. They get offended, and they don't understand what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying that all doctors are butchers and all hospitals are slaughterhouses. But it sounds like that. People come to their conclusions. And usually it's somebody that has lost somebody that was very close or has one of these diseases himself. And that's what they believe is their best option. And when you say something that goes counter to what somebody really believes or what's really close to them, they get upset about it. And so I don't try and go out and get people upset or mad. Hospitals are not, although they do a lot of cut, burn, and poison and things that I think, you know, are harmful to people. For instance, when Joel was in the car accident, that's where he belonged. He belonged in the hospital. And even though UT isn't a good hospital, they do have a good trauma center. Now, they didn't do some things for Joel early on that because he didn't have insurance and money and things like that, like put him on an ECMO machine. Will Keast, Kimberly Keast, sent me a message yesterday evening that they miss everybody, they wish they were here. Will was not allowed off at Vanderbilt. They told him he could not leave, so he resigned, and he's working out his notice and covering his shifts, but they wanted everybody to know that they miss him. One of the things Will told me, he's, you know, ECMA is a machine that you put someone on and it bypasses all their bodily functions, heart, lungs, kidneys. That's what Will does. He runs this ECMA machine. You know, the doctors are directing it all, but he's the guy sitting there looking at it, making the adjustments, doing all of this. And he asked me to ask when we went up to the hospital and they wanted to pull a plug on Joel. He said, find out if they have an ECMA machine, because his kidneys were in failure. His body was shutting down. They said, you know, he was really bad. And he said, you know, if they can get him on the ECMA machine, that will take care of those things. I found out UT Hospital does have one, but it was out of the question. They weren't even going to consider it. And it was probably too late at that point anyhow, because he died that night. But I'm thinking if he would have had fantastic insurance, they probably would have stuck him on there in the beginning, and things might have turned out different. But ultimately, what happened is God's plan. It fits in there somehow. We don't understand it. But in the resurrection, we can ask, and there'll be a reason for it. So again, let me start by saying doctors aren't all butchers and hospitals aren't all slaughterhouses, even though there's some things that go on them. If I was in a car accident and had bones sticking through my body, I would want to go to an emergency room. I wouldn't want them to do the standard things, but I'd want some treatment. You got to reset the bones. You got to take care of that or you're going to die. I talk about fast food and poisons and toxins, you know. I even kidded about, you know, these fast food places. They used to have one called Kentucky Fried Chicken. They changed the name to KFC. And I've been telling people, you know, it stands for kidney failure and cancer, because that's what you get if you eat there. But, you know, ultimately, you know, everything's not all evil and bad. And there is a place when you get sick for allopathic medicine. Now, allopathic medicine is your standard medical procedures. If you go down to the emergency room or a doctor's office, you know, those are allopathic doctors. That's allopathic medicine. What I am adamant about, though, is that when you get a serious disease, you need to take responsibility for your own lives. If that's allopathic medicine and that path, that's fine. That's someone's choice. But here's what I don't understand. Everybody sitting in this room you're dealing with something right now. You all have a terminal disease. Every single person sitting here is suffering as we speak from a terminal disease. It was caused by sin, and you're going to die. Now, you don't put your salvation in the hands of some paid professional with a PhD at the end of their name, or a self-proclaimed prophet or whatever, to tell you what you need to do yourself. You can go and you can ask opinions and you can listen to things and you can learn and you can teach. But this is so important to you that hopefully you have taken this disease on that you suffer from that is going to kill you. It's caused by sin. And your salvation is dependent upon what happens between now and the time that you die. Hopefully you have not said, well, okay, that guy is the professional, he's the scholar, he's the teacher, he's the, you know, the minister or whatever. Whatever he says, I'll do. Hopefully you have decided that you need to find out, and this is personal, and nobody knows you better than you, and you've gotten down on your knees, and you've got a direct link with God, and you've been praying, and you've been talking to him, you've been building a relationship with him, and you just haven't trusted somebody else to do that for you. So if we're smart enough to know that this is something, this disease that we're suffering from that's going to kill us, called sin, that we need to work out our own salvation with fear and trembling, like the Bible says, why would you put your life literally in the same way in the hands of somebody and then just blindly follow them? I'm not saying it's wrong to ask questions or wrong to get opinions or wrong to get advice, but study this on your own, learn some things, and then go ask some questions. Because you know what? I'll give you an example. The pharmaceutical companies don't exist to find cures for our problems. They're corporations. Anybody in this room ever been, you either own a corporation of your own or you've been on the board of a corporation? Anybody? What is the first duty of that corporation by law? Make money for the shareholders. If somebody does something that causes that not to happen, they are removed from the board, they're fired if they're an officer of the corporation, and they're possibly even prosecuted if it caused the corporation to suffer enough and put in jail because of it. The drug companies have convinced us that the reason that they exist is to find cures for the things that ail us all. Actually, what's in their best interest is to find a drug that relieves a symptom that you have to take for the rest of your life. And all kinds of people get sucked into these. Anybody ever hear of a guy named Al Gore? Okay. I don't really, kind of wish I hadn't also. But you know that they convinced Al Gore that he should go on statin drugs, to lower his cholesterol. One of the biggest hoaxes there is out there. Anybody thinks that that's like saying that poop causes flies? Because every time you look at poop, what do you see? You see flies flying around it, right? So if you were a scientist coming in, you say, oh, look, there's flies. Oh, there's poop. See, the poop causes flies. Or you could say, well, flies cause poop. You know, depending on how you look at the equation. Well, they've got people convinced that high cholesterol is dangerous and it all, you know, normal cholesterol readings were 200 to 220, you were fine, up until the day that they invented a statin drug that would artificially lower it. Then they dropped it to 140. Now they want it below 120 because they have a drug that can prescribe. Does anybody know what the cholesterol level of an Eskimo is? I'm not talking about an Eskimo that lives in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm talking about the real thing living out in the igloo, the little hut, whatever. Do you know what their average cholesterol level is? 600. You know how much heart disease they have? Zero. You know why? No. They have, their homocysteine levels are very low. Homocysteine causes the cholesterol to look similar to like Velcro balls. It scars up your arteries, your cardiovascular system. God created the cholesterol for lots of different reasons, but one of them, one things it'll do when your cardiovascular system gets scarred up and tore up from the homocysteine levels, is the cholesterol will stick to the tears and abrasions in the arteries, the arterial walls, to try and plug it to keep it from leaking and you know, oozing and bleeding to death. And then they clump together and form plaque. And you know, when they cut people open and they've died of a heart attack or something, they look at it and they see all the plaque. They say, oh, okay, the cholesterol caused the plaque, so therefore that's what killed this person. It's like flies cause poop. If you see flies, a lot of times there's poop. You see cholesterol, a lot of times people are dead. Johnny, pick on you. What was your cholesterol level when you had your heart attack? 120. Naturally. And he had a heart attack. Had absolutely nothing to do with his cholesterol levels. But anyway, they don't have a drug for homocysteine levels. There are some natural things you can take. As soon as they invent a synthetic drug, then statin drugs will fall by the wayside and they'll be pushing that, because that's the real problem. But I don't want to get off on all of that for this message for today. My point is that we need to take control of our own lives. If you get sick or somebody you love is sick, you need to do everything it takes to find out, is there something that can be done? You know, when you go to a surgeon and you say, do I need surgery? What do you think? Now, some of them are, you know, there are some, I'm not broad brushing them all, but the vast majority, if they say, no, you know, you don't really need some surgery, I suggest you go down and you go to the chiropractor and get adjusted, and then after that find an acupuncturist, and you know, that'll take care of it long term after everything's put in place. And you know, don't come for surgery. When they do that, how much money do they make? Nothing. When you go to a surgeon and you say, do I need surgery? He's got a BMW payment, he's got a, you know, tuition for college, his student loans are due, he's $180,000, $190,000 in debt, and he ain't gonna make nothing unless he cuts. It's like taking your car into an automobile repair place and you say, tell you what, just look at it and tell me whatever it needs. Just give me a call. In fact, here's my credit card. You know, the limit is $10,000 or whatever it is, just take care of it for me. Not many people would do that. But people say, well, I have insurance, so, you know, whenever I need it, just check me out. There's a phrase, and a lot of people know it, but I'm going to say it anyhow. It's all, like, universal. Almost everybody knows this. It goes something like this. It says, God helps those who help themselves. So if people know these things, but yet it's like we don't believe it. Children have faith. And if we could all have faith like the kids have, we'd be far better off. Give you an example. Although, you know, I tried to think this morning when I was putting this together, you know, what can I talk about? What can I use for examples? 1989. Kathy was 4, 5 years old, something like that. She came into our bedroom and she says, I feel like dirt. Blech. Projectile vomiting all over me. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. She had pneumonia twice before this. She had problems with, you know, respiratory problems, and she was weak and susceptible for that. And I told Mary, get up. We're gonna take her to the hospital, take her to the emergency room. And you know, while I'm sitting there with Kathy, while Mary's getting dressed, and she was going to take her and I was going to get dressed after I cleaned up a little bit, Kathy told me that She wanted Jesus to make her feel better. She said, "Daddy, I want Jesus to make me feel better." So I said, "Okay, honey, you know, let's pray." And we said a prayer. Well, we got up, we got dressed, and we loaded up in the car and went down to the hospital, Park West Hospital. Took her into the emergency room. Now, it was a big thing for me because I didn't have insurance. So for me to go to an emergency room, was like, I didn't care about the money at this point. My kid was in trouble. So we just took her there. The doctor, you know, you go through the little admittance thing, and the doctors came in and examined her, and he checked her pretty careful. And he looked at us and said, "Why did you bring her here?" I said, "Well, she could hardly breathe. She was really raspy. She's had pneumonia twice. She's got this weakness. And this is really bad." And he said, "Well, her lungs are completely clear. She's breathing without any problems. She's not running a fever or anything. She's fine. Why are you here?" And we were so upset and worried about her that we didn't stop to, you know, I mean, we had checked her out and found out this kid's in trouble. So while we're on the way home and talking, Kathy says, "Well, we asked Jesus to make me better. Don't you remember?" It was so simple to her, you know. Now I'm thinking in the car, "Oh man, how much are they going to charge us? There's nothing wrong with this kid. We took her down here for nothing. We look like fools, you know." And she says, "But Daddy, we asked Jesus to help." She knew exactly what had happened. And she knew exactly when she started to feel better. Just said, you know, "Mom and Dad," it said, "wrap you up in a blanket, get you out in the car, take you down to where they poke and prod you." 1989, in the fall of that year, this was like January, February, but in the fall of that year, in October, we were driving down to Panama City Beach. We're going to keep the Feast Tabernacles here. We were staying the first day at the chateau down the road, and then Charles Kimbrough, Nadine Kimbrough, Mary, and me were loading up, and Ida Mae, Detienne, for those of you that know her, we're loading up, and then we were going on to Lantana, Florida, to keep the peace with Neville Gilbert and his group down there. I got as far as about 5 miles north of Fort Payne, Alabama. I don't think I'll ever forget that place. Every time I drive through Fort Payne, I kind of look off the exits and check for the hospital. About 5 miles before we got there, Ida Mae was following us in her car. She pulls off, we see her pull off the side of the road, off the side of the interstate. And then we pulled off in front of her, and I backed up a little bit, get in front of her car, and get out and walk over to her car and say, "What's the matter?" She says, "Well, my temperature light is on and the gauge is almost all the way over." So I said, "Okay." So I popped the hood of her car, and I used to work in a gas station and did work on the side, rented the repair bay from them and ran that for myself. And I was the manager of a couple gas stations and had done this 200 times, and probably most of the men in here have done the same thing. I got a little rag, I put it over the radiator cap. I says, "Your thermostat's got to be stuck. So I'm going to pop the radiator cap. You give it a little eighth of a twist, quarter of a twist, and there's some tongs on there. And then it all bubbles up. You get your hand out of the way, it bubbles up and comes out and, you know, cools down a lot faster because I'm going to take her thermostat out so we can get on down the road." I did it about an eighth of a twist, and there was so much pressure that it blew the cap. It was just a plastic top for the radiator. It blew the cap right off, and my hand shot up, hit the top of the hood. And when I did that, all of the antifreeze come up, hit the top of the hood, and straight back at me. So all under my arm, down my side, and in my face, this hot antifreeze hits me. Now this is on whatever the road is, comes down here, I don't remember which, what is it, the interstate. But this was in the afternoon, like 1 o'clock, 1:30. And it was a hot day and the sun was shining and the traffic was going, you know, just past us, flying past us. And the trucks, and every time the cars and the trucks would go past, the vehicles would do this little shaking number. They were going so fast. And when that happened, I stumbled out into the interstate about the middle of the lane and opened my eyes long enough to see that I was out in the freeway. So I kind of stumbled back off to the side of the road. And Mary and Ida Mae told me that there was just a break in the traffic when that happened. Because, you know, it was just for 5 seconds, just while I was out there. But as soon as I got back out, here comes the traffic again. So we got a station wagon. It was a Ford Fairmont station wagon. We popped the back of the hatch open and I sat on the bumper and it hurt. Hurt me to breathe, hurt me like crazy. And I looked down, I took, peeled my shirt off and I looked and looked at my chest and I took my fingers and I just went down my chest a little bit and all the skin came with it like butter. It just came peeled off. So anyhow, we loaded up in our car and got off at the next exit and stopped at a gas station and asked the guy, where's the closest hospital? He says, well, it's one exit down, it's on your right, you'll see it as soon as you get going down the exit. But we didn't know it, but his mother worked in the emergency room. He looked at me and he told us where the hospital was and he called his mother and said, there's a guy that got burned and they're on their way, I just sent him over there. So they were ready when we got there. But I get there, here's the reason for all this, I'm telling you, some of you heard it a couple times, but some of you have never heard it. We get there and they're walking in, they say, oh, you're the guy that's burned, will you come with us? They put me back in this room where they got all the curtains that they pull around you. And the doctor comes back there and he says, lay down. He laid me down on a bed. He put like a cheesecloth thing over my chest and that. And he poured, well, I didn't know what it was. I said, just water. It was colloidal silver that he poured on me. And he said, we have an accident and a heart attack. He says, I'm the only doctor on call right on, you know, on duty right now. He says, I'll be back to you. I've got to take care of these other people first. He says, just lay here. You look okay. You'll be okay. I'll be back as soon as I can. So I'm laying there. Right next to me, there's just a little curtain between us. There's a woman laying there on the bed. And she's crying and moaning and, you know, felt sorry for her at first, but after a few minutes, you know, she's crying for her father. She's crying for, you know, different people there by name, crying for her mother. I don't know how old she was, but I'm guessing from the sound of her, she was in her, at least her mid-20s, maybe early 30s. And this woman's really getting on my nerves. And it hurt so bad I couldn't breathe, so I'm taking these real little short breaths. And I'm praying. I'm asking God to, it hurts so much I can't take it, to just have me pass out. Because it hurts. I can't breathe. I couldn't even cry. I'm just kind of whimpering. And as I'm praying and asking for this, and I said, and please make that woman next to me shut up. She's making me crazy. And then I go back to feeling sorry for myself, and I'm doing this thing. And it couldn't have been very long, less than a minute. All of a sudden, I'm still doing that. Wait a minute, why am I doing this? It doesn't hurt. I mean, it was tender, don't get me wrong, like a sunburn. It was much more than the sunburn at first, but after it eased up to like it was just a sunburn and tender, but it didn't hurt. The pain was gone. So I stopped. I said, I think it says, this is pretty cool. I says, and that woman shut up too. Thank you, God. You know, so the reason I say this is because, you know, you get people up here and they're saying, oh, you're sick because you've sinned and you got this disease because God smote you with a plague. or he didn't heal you because you lack faith. How much faith was in the prayer, shut that woman up, she's driving me crazy. It's not like I'm proud of it, but I'm just being honest. That's what I said and how I said it. And she didn't know. Found out she was in there, she had kidney stones, and that's why she's crying and moaning and groaning, and those are pretty painful from what I understand. When the doctor comes in, they take a little deal and they scrape off all of the skin. And then he buttered me up with, I forget now what you call it, it's a Sovodyne cream. And then wrapped me up like a mummy. And he says, well, we're going to admit you and we'll call in some specialists tomorrow. But you're going to need some skin grafts because it's taken all the skin. It was just muscle. You could see the muscle. There was no skin for an area about, I don't know, about 2.5, 3 foot round. My face was just burnt and the underside of my arm was burnt, but the skin on my chest was gone. And I said, well, I can't stay here. He says, what do you mean you can't stay here? I said, well, you don't understand. Tomorrow morning I have a sermon. I'm on the way down to the Feast of Tabernacles, Panama City Beach, and I'm on a speaking schedule. It starts tomorrow morning and I've got the sermon. He says, well, I'm sorry, sir, but you're not going anywhere. You don't understand. You're gonna get infection. Your skin is a protection from bacteria. It's gone. You're going to need skin grafts. This isn't going to heal on its own. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm on the speaking schedule, and I mean, I'm feeling pretty good now. There's no pain, right? I says, I got to get down there. He says, you're never going to make it down there. I says, but I don't have any insurance. I can't pay for any of this. He said, oh. So he gave me a card and he wrote his phone number on it. And he says, you're never going to make it all the way to Florida. He says, you're still in shock right now. He says, you're going to end up in the emergency room in some hospital on the way down there. Once you get down there, here's my card. Here's the number. Have the doctor there call me and I'll tell him what we've done and everything. But you might as well forget about tomorrow because Florida's quite a distance and you'll never make it. I said, okay. He said, I'm going to give you a prescription for pain. And he gave me the rest of this tub of the Silverdyne cream. And he says, he brought me out. He told Mary, he says, this needs to be scraped and cleaned every day. And the bandages changed. And he won't stay. He's insisting he leaves. You guys are going to have to sign him out because I can't release him. He needs skin grafts. And she says, well, if he says he's leaving, he's leaving. So they made us sign the forms and sent us on our way. We get in the car, and at the bottom of the quarter mile down where the main road for the exit is, in the hospital there, he says, there's a pharmacy down there. You can get the prescription filled. So I thought, well, maybe he's right. Maybe I should at least get the prescription filled in case it starts hurting. Like, it was hurting pretty bad. So we stopped at the pharmacy. We got a bunch of gauze, some distilled water, bandages, all that kind of garbage. Walked out of there with the prescription and the bag full of gauze and stuff. I said, hey, I'm hungry. I think it was a Hardee's or something. He said, there's a Hardee's. Let's get something to eat before we get it back on the road and start driving. So we went inside, got something to eat. Now, Ida Mae's car was a lot nicer than mine. It was more comfortable. And Mary and her said, well, why don't you ride in Ida Mae's car? You know, and Mary said, I'll drive and follow you. It's more comfortable. It'll be easier for you in there. So I says, yeah, it is a lot nicer and comfortable. All right, I'll ride with her. So we get out to the car, and I told Ida Mae, I says, I'm feeling pretty good. I'll drive. And she looked. I said, I'm okay. I'm going to drive. So we got in the car, and we drove all the way down to Panama City Beach, got there that night. Next morning, I'm up there giving the story and telling everybody how God had just healed me. Before the feast was over, skin had already, I had one layer of skin had grown over. And on the eighth day in Lantana, I got in the pool and went swimming. It had completely healed over. And after about 2 or 3 months, you couldn't even tell ever that I was even burnt. Now, the reason I go through all of this is there are a lot of people suffering that are sick. And the very first place we need to go is to God. I find it ironic when somebody's, you know, got cancer or something, heart disease, and the doctors have given them all kinds of treatments and taken all kinds of money from them. Then finally the doctor sits them down and he says, well, there's nothing more we can do. It's in God's hands now. And the family goes, oh, you know, they just break down and lose it. Like, you know, that's the worst thing that could possibly said, when that's the best thing that could possibly said. And before you even started messing with the doctors in the first place, go to God and ask Him. Now also remember that sometimes people get sick and you get a disease, it's just chance. You know, like there was some examples in the Bible about a balcony or a porch that collapsed, and the disciples asked Jesus, you know, what was the sin? And basically he says, well, you know, they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Things happen. Sometimes God allows us to go through something that we've done to ourselves, and we learn lessons from it. Other times somebody else does something and we suffer because of it. But he doesn't really want his people to be suffering. There are a lot of laws in the Bible that are connected to health. Most people here, they keep the Sabbath and the holy days. They understand about clean and unclean. And the very first thing people start to talk about when they explain to somebody the laws about clean and unclean foods, one of the things that always comes up is health. Well, that's a physical part of it, and it's real. God created it, and some animals were created to be food, and some were not created to be food. And we all know a lot of the stories and the studies and the things about clean and unclean and the healthy aspect of that. But it's not just health. That might be the physical thing to kind of make it important for us, but it's more than just health. There's something more tied to that. Now, I'm not going to so much get into the spiritual today. I'm going to stick with more of the physical things. But there's laws concerning leprosy. What you have to do with leprosy. You know, what do they call them? Quarantine laws. Where it's not spread. Communicable diseases are not spread. You know, they used to. Anybody that's my age or close to it or older, you probably in your lifetime, I've seen it at least twice that I can remember, where the health department would come out and if somebody had a communicable disease, they would literally post a notice at the front door that it was quarantined and they couldn't come out and you couldn't go in. They did that to my house when my dad had tuberculosis. I was a kid, and I'm looking, they got this notice on the front of the house, and, you know, one of my friends, somebody in their house, you know, but with things like AIDS and diseases that are communicable diseases and can be transferred, and they don't do any of that anymore. It's not politically correct. But according to the Bible, when you have a disease or something wrong that can spread like that, that's the answer for it. There's laws that are regarding that. Leprosy is one, you know, isolating the leprosy. There's other laws that deal with, you know, depending on translation, some call it mildew. It's mold. What happens when you get mold in your house? You know, we know more about this now because we're all educated and we're in the modern age. But, you know, God talks about mold in Leviticus. And there's a procedure for what you do. You get a shot at cleaning it up, but if it doesn't clean up and it keeps coming back, you have to tear the house down. If you don't, you can ignore the law. If you don't, there's an automatic penalty that goes with it. You're going to get sick. It can even kill you, depending on the type of the mold. But it'll affect you. Let's take a look at Exodus chapter 15, verse 22, because this isn't very far out from leaving Egypt. We're only in Exodus 15 here. This is one of the first things that God told the Israelites early on. It says, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. Then he cast it into the waters, and the waters were made sweet. There he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them and said, so here, this is a statute and an ordinance and a test. And he said, verse 26, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. Okay. I want to talk about this for just a second. I'm not going to spend a lot of time. But does that mean that they were promised they'd never get the flu, they'd never get the sniffles, they'd never have a cold, they'd never have a headache, they'd never have a backache? They were going to be... No, that's not what he said. He said, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians. Does anybody know what diseases that the Egyptians had? Anybody done any studying? Heart disease? Cancer? Arthritis? They had all of the debilitating diseases that we have as a society, and God promised them that he wouldn't put them on his children if they diligently obeyed him, and it was a test. So if you don't diligently obey him, what does that mean? Now see, some people take this and they say, aha, everybody has arthritis is a dirty, rotten sinner, and they're sinning against God, and they're not obeying him, right? I said, you could, let me put it like this. You can go into a mental institution and you can find crazy people in the mental institution, and you can find some that are demon possessed. Does that mean that everybody that's in the mental institution is demon possessed? No. Everybody that's demon possessed, I'm not even going to go down that road, but let's take a look at this, basically something similar to this, but it's in Deuteronomy 7, starting in verse 12. It's the second witness of this. It says, then it shall come to pass, because you listen to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord your God will keep with you the covenant and the mercy which he swore to your fathers. He will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your land, your grain and your new wine and your oil, the increase of your cattle and the offspring of your flock, in the land which he swore to your fathers to give you. You shall be blessed above all peoples, and there shall not be a male or a female barren among you or among your livestock. And the Lord will take away from you all sickness and will afflict you with none of the terrible diseases of Egypt which you have known, but will lay them on those who hate you. So here again it talks about if you're obedient. What I'm trying to say is if you are obedient, if you're in a covenant relationship with God, and if you come to him, there's a possible answer for what is afflicting you. Now there's some conditions, and I'm going to talk about some of them as we get in here. Flip over to Deuteronomy 28. So here's what happens if we rebel against God. Whether it's intentional or unintentional, it's still rebelling, it's still a sin. But I'll never forget the year that Edward Andre came down here and kept feast with us. And he asked me, he'd been talking to a lot of people, and he came to me one evening and he said, why are so many people here sick and have financial problems? And I said, well, what do you mean? Like you've never seen sick or poor people before? He said, yeah, I deal with them all day long, but I'm talking about it percentage-wise in the population. The percentage of people that are suffering and sick here in this group are much higher than the percentage of people in the world. And I said, because we've taken the covenant, we've said we want in, we'll accept the terms and conditions, we want a relationship with you, and then a lot of us give them the finger, and we want to do it our way. And with that covenant, with all of those blessings, with those promises, there's also cursings that come with it. I'm going to read just one part of it here. It says in Deuteronomy 28:15, but it shall come to pass if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all his commandments and his statutes, which I command you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Cursed shall you be in the city, and cursed shall you be in the country. Cursed shall your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body and produce of your land, the increase of your cattle and offspring of your flocks. Cursed shall you be when you come in, and cursed shall you be when you go out. And the Lord will send on you cursings, confusion, rebuke, and all that you set your hand to do, until you are destroyed and until you perish quickly. Because the wickedness of your doings in which you had forsaken me, the Lord will make the plague cling to you until he has consumed you from the land which you are going to possess. The Lord will strike you with consummation, with fever, and with inflammation and severe burning, fever with the sword and scorching and with mildew, mold. And they shall pursue you until you perish. It goes on, but basically, he blesses us, but if we refuse to obey him after we've accepted his covenant, we get punished 7 times over versus just the normal heathens and the people in the world. So, you know, I'm not here to judge. I'm like standing in front of a glass house throwing stones. That's not what I'm trying to do here. I'm just saying, if your house is a mess, spiritually and physically, or your body is a mess, spiritually and physically, maybe it's time to get on your knees and ask God to help you. Now, there can be other reasons. I'm not saying every crazy person is demon-possessed. Every person with cancer has been smote with a plague from God. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is, if you are in this covenant relationship, you better check it out and make sure you're not bringing this down on yourself. Because just like there's blessings, there's punishments. We can't get away with what the world gets away with. Our lives will be hell if we try it. Now, let's look at Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 34. We all know about Jesus and how he healed and how many people he healed. That was a huge part of his ministry. Matthew 14, 34 says, and when they had crossed over, they came into the land of Gennesaret. And when the men of that place recognized him, they went out into all the surrounding region, brought to him all who were sick, and begged him that they might only touch the hem of his garment. And as many as touched it were made perfectly well. And I know most of you here know it, but one of the ways he did more than this, but one of the ways that Jesus healed, says that they all who were sick, they all wanted to touch the hem of his garment. So he had on some really fancy robe with super big hems. Maybe they even had the little lights that glittered in them or something, right? I'm not going to get into all of this, what all of this means, but it basically is their fringes. In Greek, I think, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, because it's all Greek to me, but it's kresperion. It means the corner, the fringes. It's tzitzit. And a lot of people have them here. You just look around. But basically, in a 10-second explanation, in Numbers 15:37, I believe it is, starts right around in there, it talks about taking your fringes and putting a ribbon of blue in them and putting them on the four corners of your garment. It's just so that when you look on them, basically it's going to remind you of God's laws and keep you from sin, to paraphrase and oversimplify it. When done correctly, you have 8 strings, 5 knots, And Zeetzeet, the numerical value of it is 600, 600, and 8, and 5 is 613, and that's how many laws there are in the Torah. So it's a symbol of God's laws. He's promised that if you diligently keep them, he'll keep all of the illnesses and sicknesses of the Egyptians from being upon you. So what a more appropriate thing to want to touch than his fringes? That was the symbol of freedom from disease. So all the sick came to him. And that was a big way that he healed, not the only way. Now, I'm going to tell you something else. Let's look at Matthew chapter 15, starting in verse 21. We all know that Jesus had the power to heal, and that he healed a lot of people. And the examples are in the Bible. But do you realize that he didn't want to heal everyone? That goes counter to what churchianity talks about. Let's read in Matthew 15, 21. It says, "Then Jesus went out from there and departed from the region of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region and cried out to him, saying, 'Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed.' But he answered her not a word," ignored her. "And his disciples came and urged him, saying, 'Send her away, for she cries out after us.' But he answered and said, 'I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel.'" So he tells her, he says, "I wasn't sent to help you." He says, "But then she came and worshipped him, saying, 'Lord, help me.' But he answered and said, 'It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs.'" Here he even slammed her a little bit, you know. She's Gentile, she's from Canaan, you know, you're the dogs. I ain't here to deal with you. Verse 27, "And she said, 'Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table.' Then Jesus answered and said to her, 'O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire.' And her daughter was healed from that very hour." Now here Jesus healed her remotely. I believe it was through, maybe I'm wrong, but I believe it was through scalar waves as part of God's creation. That's something that I understand a little bit about. And, you know, he did it miraculously somehow. He used something in creation to cause this woman's daughter to be healed. And it was done at the exact time that he said that it can be done according to her faith. And I'm going to let you in on something that shouldn't be a secret, but sometimes it is. When we cry out to God, we all know about how, you know, the prayers of the unrighteous or, you know, and the sinner, it's an abomination to God and he doesn't listen to them. But you're not supposed to be in that group. There's a promise that says when you cry out to God that he hears us. So let's take a look at Psalm chapter 34, verse 15. You know, one of the things I think of, maybe because I'm a little nuts or whatever, but I think that if God says it, he means it. You know, people try and look at things that are clear. We were talking about this last night, I think it was last night for a while. There are some gray things in the Bible, things that are kind of hard to understand. You know, it could be one way, it could be the other. You really got to study, you got to put things together. And some we'll never have the answer for. But there are some things that are clear. It's simple. You look at it, it's there. And then people don't want to believe them, or they don't have faith to believe them, or they don't think that it really applies to them, or whatever the reasoning is behind it. Now, it's true. Sometimes those things are conditional, like you got to be in this covenant, okay? Well, if you really need it, the answer is, what do you got to do to be in a covenant relationship with them? Do it, and then you get to claim it. We got a contract. Literally, this is a contract. He's made promises. He's either a bold-faced liar, and if he is, you can't believe anything that's written in here. Go home, watch the game, go have fun, whatever it is. If you can't believe him, you can't believe nothing. But if you can believe him, then you can believe it all. In fact, if you think, now, maybe he's not, you know, maybe you got to ask yourself and examine yourself, is this really what's going on? But if you think he ain't holding up his end of the deal, You can remind them. You ever hear of anybody negotiating with them? I'm not talking about, oh God, if you get me out of this jam, I promise I'll serve you for the rest of my life. We've all done that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, my God, why have you forsaken me? You know, somebody was calling him on the carpet there a little bit. We got a deal here. My enemies are surrounding me. David, you can read the writings of David and some of the things. Yeah, David was a sinner and he did things wrong and God withdrew his hand from him and his protection. And then, you know, you can see it go back and forth. David doing it. But David, search me. Search my heart. Now you got to be brave to say that and you got to have pure motivation to say that. You got to be willing to change if you say that. But the good news is you can say it. You say it, my life is yours. Do with it what you want. I just want in on the deal. Let's look at what it says here. Psalm 34, 15. It says, the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their cry. Now here's the deal. You want God to hear you? You got to be one of the righteous. You can't have it both ways. You can't be like, Frank Sinatra? Or was it, you know, I did it my way? Whoever wrote that song? You got to do it his way. You got to be willing to do it his way. Now the good news is if you do it his way, man, is it going to be better for you. If you're doing it your way, I'll tell you right now, your life is miserable. It's a constant struggle. How do I know all these things? Because I did it my way for a long, long time. I told him, get out of my life, leave me alone. Swore at him, cussed at him, called him every dirty name I could think of. I was doing it my way. You can look up miserable in the dictionary and say, see Mark Carr. I don't want to do that no more. That don't work. Verse 16, it says, the face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. Whoa. You realize he's got a plan here? And God is against those that do evil? Verse 17, the righteous cry out, and the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. Every little boy, I don't know if little girls do it, I guess they would, but just about every little boy goes through, when they get together, they say, my daddy's bigger than your daddy. My daddy's stronger than your daddy. My daddy can do anything, because they just love their daddy. He's the most biggest, powerful, strongest man in the whole earth. Guess what? Your daddy is. There's nothing he can't do. There's nothing he won't do for us unless it's going to do something that's going to actually be a negative against us. We've got a promise from him. Let's turn to Psalm chapter 90, verse 10. I said we got this contract, and I'm going to tell you the reason why. You know, sooner or later, we're all going to die. I started out by telling everybody here, you have a terminal disease. It's called sin. You're going to die because of it. But look at what the Bible says about this. Psalms chapter 90, verse 10, it says, the days of our lives are 70 years. And if by reason of strength they are 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow. For it is soon cut off and we fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, so is your wrath. So teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. So what's he asking for here? First, he comes out and he makes a statement. You got a contract in your hand that says you got 70 years coming. Now, maybe I'm crazy, but if you come down with cancer and you're 54 years old, you can get on your knees and you can say, what's going on here, God? I got 16 more years. Sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? But can you believe what he says? Now, are you going to have to change some things? Absolutely. You don't get cancer by yourself. You don't just get woke up one day and, man, I got cancer. Or, oh, I got heart disease. Or you might have to say, show me, teach me. Tell me what I can do. Protect me. First thing out of your mouth probably should be the protect me. Because if you just got told you got cancer, somebody wants to come along with cut, poison, and burn. If you're strong, you got 80. Now, does that mean you drop over dead at 81? No. But he guarantees you 70. There's people out here saying, well, that just doesn't mean that. It's, you know, now you just went too far. Why does he say this? He says, teach us to number our days so that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Why would he want you to be able to number your days? What possible motive, getting tongue-tied here, could there be so that you learn how to number your days? He says, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow. Most people go through their lives and it is a struggle. They're work, 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 and pain and suffering and pain and suffering and pain and suffering and not a whole lot of happiness. Hopefully you get a little enough happiness to get you from one sorrow to another to keep going so you don't say, just give me a 38 and I'm going to end all of this and it ain't worth it. But unfortunately, most people don't have a lot of joy in their life. And it is pain and suffering and sorrow. Whether it's living paycheck to paycheck or one problem to another problem or persecution to persecution. So how could learning how to number your days and doing all of this, how could this be of benefit to you? What is the fix? What's the cure? We read it. Did you guys forget it already? Exodus 15, Deuteronomy 7. What's the cure? What's the fix? Diligently. Enter into a covenant relationship with God and diligently follow all of his ways. If you do that, now nobody's going to do it perfectly, let's be honest. We're all going to screw it up and mess it up. But if that is your goal, if that's what you try and do, what will your life be like? Anybody, whoever is the most skeptical, the most, you probably don't want to raise your hand after I do it, but the most negative, the most skeptical person would have to admit that if they were truly a godly man or woman, their life would be better. If somehow they were able to accomplish this. If you're a woman and you live with an abusive husband, if your husband was able to do this, you know that your life would be better. If you live with an abusive wife or a bad wife or whatever, you know that your life would be better if your wife was able to do this. If your children are out of control and causing you nothing but sorrow and grief, you know that your life would be better if the children were able to live a godly life. Well, what makes us think that it wouldn't be better if we were able to do this ourselves? The most important one in the household to do it is the husband, because most of the time the wife will follow the husband's lead. Not always, I understand. I'm talking in general terms. Second, it's extremely important for the mother to do it, because the kids, for the most part, are going to follow the mother's lead. I've met people, I've seen people, we don't name no names, you all know people in your lives, inside of the church, outside of the church. Look at the ones that the kids are the worst, really screwed up and messed up. You know, this is the thing that's in common. The husband's out of control, he doesn't treat his wife with any respect. The wife doesn't respect her husband and resents him, and the kids learn from their mother and they don't respect either one. So ultimately it goes back to the husband. It's the husband's responsibility. He sets the tone for the whole family. He's got to stand up and be the man. And God talks about that in the Bible, that the husband is supposed to be the spiritual head. Now, when he refuses or won't, then sometimes a woman has to take that lead. But it's not supposed to do it, be like that. But he does not want us to be sick and suffering. That's not his goal. That's not his desire. That's not his wants. And he tells us how we can eliminate the vast majority of it. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 7, turn there. It tells us that we need to flee evil. You know, God doesn't want us to be sick. It says in verse 7, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. This next part is really intriguing to me. It says in verse 8, it will be health to your flesh. If you depart from evil, it says, it's health to your flesh. Now, what do you think that that means? Fleeing from the evil. So what's the opposite of that? If you don't flee from the evil, if you embrace the evil, if you practice the evil yourself, what's that going to do to you? You don't have a guarantee. You don't have a promise of health and help from God. It says, and strength to your bones. Honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of all your increase, so your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights. Happy is the man who finds wisdom, and the man who gains understanding. For her proceeds are better than the profits of silver, and her gain than fine gold. She is of more precious than rubies, and all the things that you may desire cannot compare to her. So this is a tall order, but it's a huge promise as far as the value of what God says it's worth. Verse 16, length of days is in her right hand. So that means long life. And in her left hand, riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who retain her. This is what God desires for us. This is what God wants for us. Now, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. We're all going to die. Unless Jesus returns before we die, we are all going to die. He doesn't promise you you're going to live forever. There's no Methuselahs. There's no Noahs. There's no Adams. And by the way, they're all dead. Okay? Sometimes when we pray and we ask God to heal us, the answer is no. You know, it's just as wrong for somebody to say, oh, you have this XYZ disease. God is smiting you with a plague. How many people would say Paul was a dirty, rotten sinner? Now, Paul would say he's a dirty, rotten sinner, so don't get... But let's look at what Paul said. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7, it says, and lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of revelation, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distress, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. The answer for Paul was no, you need this. Sometimes we suffer things or go through things because we need to learn something from it. Sometimes it's a result. Ultimately, all disease and all death is a result of sin. If it weren't for the sin in the Garden of Eden, death would have never entered the world. But you could get cancer for a multitude of reasons. Exposure to magnetic fields, foodless food, chemical poisoning, weaknesses. There's another saying, everybody knows it. I'll say it, you guys finish it. Doctors, anybody in the health professional, they'll tell you this. It's about stress. They'll tell you, stress kills. That's right. We all know this. Stress kills. Emotions kill, too. I've yet, out of all of the people, and it's come up on the feast list again, some people have, you know, read some of the messages and that, but out of all, it's not just me, I've read others said this long before me, but somebody that has liver and gallbladder problems, I've yet to meet anybody that said, you know, this is my problem, can you help with this? And there's been lots. So far they've been honest. The ones, the professionals that do this for a living, say if they say no, chances are they're lying. They just won't admit it to you. But out of all the people that I've asked, they didn't have anger, resentment, unforgiveness, emotions like that that are just trapped and bottled up, because it has a direct effect on your liver and gallbladder. And it manifests in disease in that area. You know, the Bible says not to let the sun go down on your anger. There's a reason for all of these things. I couldn't find it, but most of you were here when I had the little energy meter where we could measure the energy in the glass of water. Anybody remember that? You measure the water. I think somebody had some, I can't remember the name of the water. It was an energy drink, not you know, structured water, like out of Vitalizer or something, where it's restructured and energy's added to it. And then you get mad and you can measure the energy, your life coming out of the water, and then you curse the water with words and anger, and you go up there and right against the glass, it's dead, there's nothing there. Then you pray and you ask God to bless it and heal it and restore it, and it's back. Thoughts, anger, intentions, words, they all send a signal that has a negative effect if they're bad and a positive effect if they're good. So, look around. Look out into the world. There's so many people sick. So many people hurting. So many people dying. They don't have to. At least not now. We all die. But they don't have to die now. I talked to one woman and she said she made a deal with God. If she could live long enough to see her children grow up, that's all she asked for. She got cancer when her kids were 8, 10, 12, in that range. She's got at least two of them that I know of. She begged God, just please let me get them out of high school so that they can be old enough to be on their own. She's got to be in her 70s today. You don't have to die. There's so many choices out there. The best cure, the best source comes from God. But if you look at it, the things that really work physically are part of His creation. Kelly, Gerson, Hoxie, all of these people. Rife, it's not. We're going to give a demonstration on Rife tonight. It's not something that just grows out into fields, but it works off of His laws in His creation. And it cures cancer and other illnesses, sicknesses. So we'll do some of the physical tonight. But if I can leave everybody with one thing. If your life is a mess, if it's a struggle, if it's full of sorrow, get on your knees, give Him your life. Tell Him you want in on the covenant and ask Him for His blessings. You're His child. Which one of you that's a parent wouldn't want your children to crawl up in your lap if they were afraid and say, help me. They said, help me, mommy, help me, daddy. And they were hurting. Heck, you go running to them. You're created in his image. That's what he wants to do for us. Let's do 93.